fucked on me.
What's getting?
I buy what I wanna buy. We supply who buy. Walk in your trap and take over your trap. Walk in your trap and take over your trap. Walk in your trap and take over your trap. Walk in your trap and take over your trap. Grams, trap, pounds, trap, bands, trap, pass, trap.
You know when you hear that song, what it is. You know two things. You know that the Ravens got a road win in the AFC North, and you know it's the Deep Cover Podcast. We're back talking Ravens like we do, talking life like we do. Joined as always by Chris and Carrie. Man, it's always more fun to talk after a win. Say that before. And this one felt good. It felt so good to go up there to Cincinnati and do them Bengals the way they did them. Ripping off shoes, all of that. So we're going to talk about all of that, take a little look ahead to the Colts game as well. But first and foremost, got to check in. Chris, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. Happy to be here with a win. I was a little nervous there. I thought that week one Bengals offensive output, I thought that was going to be a fluke, and I thought they were going to come out guns blazing. But thank the Lord they didn't. They came out with water pistols that day.
Yeah, they were still kind of sputtering a little bit. You know, they were able to put together a couple drives later as the game went on, but still nothing like what we've seen in the past, whether that's the calf, whether that's just other things they got going on, you know, Joe Burrow's calf to be specific, whether that's other things they got going on offense, or whether it's the Ravens defense. Which is what I lean towards as a big factor in that too. We'll take it. Kerry, what about you, man? How you been?
Good, man. Same thing, man. Happy to be talking about a win. You know, some of the stuff we kind of talked about and foreshadowed last week kind of came true. You know, talking about this Bengals offense that, you know, people have been able to kind of bog down a little bit. You know, after Chase's first year kind of explosion, you know, the too high stuff kind of bogs them down. You know, they still have some great things that they do. They still have a ton of talent, but you see with Burrow and that calf and, you know, kind of sapping his mobility a bit, you know, that's something where I think coaching comes into play and you got to be able to add a little bit more to the mix. And I think they just haven't been able to find that balance yet. So, hey, that sounds like a them problem. I'm glad that it's not a Ravens problem when we got that W. So
that's definitely a them problem. Cause we seen last year that they can get on a run, you know, and string together 7, 8, 9 games in a row when everything start clicking. But, you know, they talked about this on one of the Athletic Pod shows this week. They got a bunch of shows this year, so I can't remember which one I heard it on. But I know it was Robert Mays who said it, where he said, look, you know, you need your best players to be your best players, right? I mean, obviously Burrow, Chase, T. Higgins, they're best guys on offense. But he felt like if those guys aren't great, they don't really have anything else to turn to. Like, they got to be great every game. And if they're not, they don't really have anything else that they can hang their hat on. I was kind of surprised they didn't run the ball more because I thought they were having some, you know, some success with it. I mean, it wasn't anything huge, a couple of low 4 or 5 yard type games, but you never know when one is going to pop, you know, if you just keep at it. So I was kind of surprised that they didn't do that more. But I think part of that is kind of just their mentality. Like you kind of hit on, they've been used to like attacking down the field in the passing game, going vertical, you know, big plays. And it's like, when that wasn't clicking, it's like, well, we could go to the run game, but nah, let's just keep dropping back and keep trying to slam this thing. Cause that's been their bread and butter, but it wasn't on Sunday. It was not their bread and butter.
And honestly, I mean, you kind of can't blame them. You look at you facing a Ravens team that doesn't have Marlon Humphrey or Marcus Williams. In their mind, they're thinking, okay, something's going to, you know, come open at some point, and it just never really did.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't take more vertical shots. Like, even just, like, just take a shot. You know, I mean, we remember that play with where T had I think it was Brandon Stevens, I forgot who else, and he just mauled both dudes. And it's like when you have talents like that who can go up and, you know, make chicken salad out of chicken shit, you give them the opportunity to, and it seemed like they just were hesitant to take those deep shots. I mean, even if it's covered, with dudes that talented, you give them that shot to make a play. And I was just surprised that they didn't.
I remember that play you're talking about, because I'm like, man, this guy is double teamed. Well, he was double teamed on the ground. He was one, yeah. he singled up.
All alone.
could nobody go up there the way he went up there. So maybe the, you know, Joe Burrow's calf injury was more of a factor in that too. Maybe that's why they weren't pushing the ball down the field, you know, as much as they had in the past. Because I think the Ravens' pass rush, you know, I don't think it was like it was in the first week against the Texans in terms of like really putting heat on the quarterback. You know, they had some pressures here and there, but it was a little more like uneven. So I can't really say it was that. But I was wondering about that and how it was affecting him, like the calf, because I didn't chart this. I wish I had, because I'm thinking about it as I was watching the game. But I was like, man, he took a lot of three-step drops with that little hop shimmy drop, just getting the ball out quick. And I was like, that kind of used to be a thing with the Ravens when Wink was here, because you knew heat was coming from somewhere, so you had to get it out. But I'm wondering, like, man, I'm wondering if the calf, if he can't really do a lot of deeper drop stuff right now. And so they're having to shorten it up. I don't know. It was just something I was thinking about. It might not be that at all. But I was just kind of, without writing it down, just kind of noting it, like, man, here's another three-step. Here's another little, you know, shuffle drop. Here's a three-step. Here's another little shuffle. I was like, he's doing a lot of short drops. So who knows if that's a part of it. Because I know they talked about having to manage it. He talked about it himself, kind of having to manage that injury, because it seems to just like flare up, you know, at some point during the game. So I don't know, maybe that's a factor, but whatever, like Kerry said, that's their own problem, whatever those problems are. We're not losing no sleep over here for them, you know. It's tough out there, you know, the struggle is real. But I think looking back at that game, you know, as we start to kind of talk about different parts of it, and Chris gave us another professional rundown. You got to start with Lamar, you know, right off the top, because he came out cooking. You know what I mean? Accurate, getting the ball out, good decisions. You know, last week it looked like he was rusty. He said himself he was rusty. But this week he looked sharp right from the get. That first drive, he looked sharp.
Yeah, well, what did he start off, like 7 for 7 or something like that?
Yeah, can't get no sharper.
Yeah, it's a big difference from how he came out against the Texans. The whole offense, really. It looked like he was comfortable. It looked like he'd been in this system for a long time. You know, just the precise passing, the passes that we know he could make. You know, obviously, big media and trolls, they often go back and say that he can't make these throws, but this is stuff that he's been doing since he was in college. It's whether you choose to see it or you just want to ignore it. And he put it on full display on Sunday against the Bengals, because there were some pinpoint passes. It was some beautiful pocket awareness. And, I mean, obviously he had that fumble, but, you know, that play didn't even count, did it?
Illegal hands to the face on the Bengals. Yeah.
So that play didn't even count. So, I mean, even though there was a penalty, you still want to see him clean that up a bit. But I know he had that miss to Zay over the top. But then you go back to a similar play to Aguilar, and he hit pinpoint. Yeah. You know, and that throw to Duve, if Duve doesn't get his hand, his arm held, his left arm held, I think that's a touchdown, because it was right there. And the cornerback held Duve's left arm when he tried to make that catch. So he was just pinpoint that day. So obviously he had some that it wasn't all 100% accurate, but it was beautiful to see him perform like that in an offense that, I mean, you know, we know that he can be a very good passer in this league. And this type of offense, I think, will accentuate those skills that we know he has.
Yeah, if you're one of those people out there still talking about what he can't do as a passer, oh, he can't make this throw, or he can't process, he can't make reads, you really just expose yourself at this point. I mean, nobody can take that seriously anymore at this point. His rookie year, okay, it was unknown. We didn't really know. 2019, you know, okay, MVP, but is that fluky? Was that G-Ro? Blah, blah. I never went there because, like you said, you watch him in college, he had been doing it. He had been doing it already. You already knew that he could make all the throws. You know that he can handle, you know, drop back passing game. He was basically running probably a more sophisticated passing game in some ways in college than he was running his first couple of years with the Ravens. So, I mean, you already knew he was capable of doing it, you know, had pocket presence, right? Understood how to manipulate himself in the pocket and find windows. And, you know, he just did all of that stuff. So, like, it was all there to be seen. Of course, coming into the league, there's a learning curve because new offense, speed of the game, you know, all of that. But that's never seemed too big for him. You know what I mean? If anything with Lamar, it's like sometimes he's got to slow himself down, right? It's not the game being too fast for him. It's like him being too fast for the game. Sometimes he just gets kind of so hyped up because he's so good. He's so athletic. He's so special. You just kind of, you know, got to settle it down a little bit and say, hey, just kind of remember your fundamentals, right? Stay within yourself, stay within your footwork, stay within your reads, and you'll be good. And, but he wants to make plays that he knows he can make. And I think sometimes he just gets like a little overly excited about some of those things. And he's got a great arm. You can see that on any deep ball he throws. The ball jumps out of his hand. So it's just a matter of kind of dialing that stuff in, and that's going to come with time. And I was excited to see it happen during the game. It's one of those things where you didn't have to say, oh, man, we're going to have to wait till next week. Let's see if he can hit some of those deep balls. He went from missing them to hitting them within the same game. So that was encouraging to me that he was able to kind of dial that in without having to wait until, you know, the next practice or the next game. And, man, he's got some dudes running around out there. You know, hopefully Odell is back before too long. I don't feel like his chances for this week are probably all that good, but hopefully it's not anything that lingers with the ankle. But, man, him running out there, Zay running out there, Aguilar running, Duvern, I mean, Bateman, he's just got dudes running everywhere. And it never really looked like they were struggling offensively because of anything the Bengals defense did. Like, it was self-inflicted stuff, right? When they weren't having success on a drive. So that was a really good sign to me, because there've been times where they've had, you know, some trouble with the Bengals defense kind of stymieing them. And it didn't really look like that on Sunday at all.
Yeah, for sure. My one thing that you said last season to me always kind of sticks out. I always come back to it. And to me, it's kind of like the measure of their ability to take the next step as an offense. And you said with Lamar, we know you can do the remarkable.
Yeah.
How consistently can you do the routine things? And that's what you saw in this game. You know, he was in complete command. He did the routine things over and over again, you know, was accurate, great decision-making. You saw him going through the progressions. Now, he did a remarkable too. I mean, very first drive, you saw that blitz, that blitzer come free. He made that guy miss. He's got a DM bearing down on him. He makes that dude miss, and he turns like a what would have been like an 8-yard loss into like a 3-yard gain. And it's just like another play for him. It's just like whatever. Like, he just does it and moves on to the next. Like, he's just that special, but then also like that calm as well. You know, to be a guy that kind of gets amped up and gets as hyped up as he does to make plays when he's in the play, it just seems like there's a calm there. Like, there's a understanding that, you know, the first guy isn't going to be able to tackle me, so I'm not even worried about that guy. Kind of like how Barry Barry Sanders used to say, I'm not really worried about the first guy because I know that the first guy is not going to be able to tackle me. So I'm looking at the guy after him. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like what the vibes I get from Lamar in that way. So it's funny because from like a fantasy standpoint, like a lot of the fantasy analysts I've listened to, they're kind of like waiting for more with this offense because, you know, people have gotten so hyped up and they know what Monken's track record is. And they think about, you know, just throwing it all over the yard, 300 plus yards and, you know, this and that. And so it kind of feels like people are a little disappointed with the Ravens' offensive start and, you know, thinking they're moving a little bit slow. But, you know, I wish I could just tell all those people, just watch this game. If you watch him play quarterback in this game, there's no way you leave this game disappointed with, you know, what he was able to do and what it means for the team going forward.
Yeah, what Coach Prime say? We coming. if you are worried about that, you're like, man, where is it? We come. I gotta keep it PG because I hear his, but I think about Lou Young when I said, was she on top and I tell her get up? So I gotta get that out of my head and only think about Deion and not the Lou Young because he had like 3-4 of them. anyway, I think another thing that we got to talk about, part of the reason that Lamar was able to have time, and you know he has that natural sort of calmness to him when he plays, like you said. But what can make you feel even more calm is when your O-line plays the way that the Ravens O-line played for the majority of that game, down two starters. You know, but we were fortunate that, you know, we rock with the founder and the president of the Patrick McCary Hive Club.
Yes, sir.
He would have told you off the jump, like, oh yeah, McCary at tackle, ain't no problem. That ain't gonna be no problem. I ain't worried about that. I think Mustafa might have been the bigger question, but he had a really solid game too. Mm-hmm. Something I noticed about him, maybe it's just something he does. He's always like the first guy running downfield, like to help the teammate up or like go to work. He's the first guy all the time. I kept noticing. I was like, man, this must be a thing that he just does. But, you know, between those two guys, Morgan Moses mowing over DBs on run plays, Kevin Zeitler still just steady. I will say, I think Zeitler, you know, he might be showing little bits of leaks in the dam in terms of A's this year. But I don't know. I don't want to necessarily put that on him because the NFL, you're not going to win. I mean, you're dropping back for 30, 40 plays or whatever. And, you know, you're going up against dudes who are the best in the world at what they do. So you're not going to win every rep. So maybe I shouldn't put that on him, but, I thought they played well in the drive back game, in the running game. Obviously they opened up some huge holes. They were doing some really cool stuff in the run game actually. But I won't go off on a tangent on that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when you've got offensive line play like that, you're going to be able to get some good things done on offense.
No, I agree with you with the Zeitler stuff. It's just there's some plays out there where you kind of see that a lack of flexibility, a lack of, you know, it just
a couple little ones here or there where it's like the old. Kevin Zeitler probably wouldn't have lost that rep, but
right. But like you put it perfectly. You said cracks in the dam, like just little ones, not huge little ones.
It's a little very small right now.
Not to, you know, speak on the rest of the offensive line. Like you know, you started off with McCary, and you know, I think I've been so high on him as a tackle for the last few years. I wasn't really surprised about that. The main thing with him is just stay healthy.
Yeah.
Because when he's been given these opportunities, he's gotten hurt every time. So I think at this point, we know what he is. We know who he is. Now it's just about him being able to stay on the field and, you know, play up to those standards that we know he can play at. Because we've seen him do it at a high level at right tackle. We've seen him play left tackle, you know, at a more than serviceable level, in my opinion.
Definitely in that game, going up against Hendrickson. I'd say he won that matchup. He more than held his own. I mean, Hendrickson, you know, maybe 2-3 plays. But again, going up against top dudes.
Yeah, and Mustafa, I mean, that was a pleasant surprise. I thought he had a good preseason. He was one of the guys that I was hoping they didn't let go. He didn't make the initial 53 man, but I was glad when they got him back, because I think I tweeted it out when they brought him back to the practice squad. You know, like Kerry says, insurance for your insurance. And look, not even week two when they needed him.
Yep.
So, and I thought he played very well. I mean, against a DJ Reader, come on. Like,
yeah,
that is the nose tackle of nose tackles. You know, that's how they build him. So, I was really impressed with him. And, you know, Morgan Moses too, man. Last year, there was some ups and downs with Morgan Moses last year. And it's still not perfect, but I think he's playing better and he looks more comfortable this year than he did last year. And the athleticism that he shows when he goes up to the second level, or even if he's pulling, it like, I don't think people understand how athletic that dude is.
Yeah,
when he's in space. And every week, well, for the first 2 weeks, he has a bullseye when he's on at that second level. And that's one of the most frustrating things you see, especially when, you know, you're evaluating any kind of offensive line prospects, is when they get to the second level and they're not able to finish those smaller DBs. And he has no problem with that. Like, he is going to put those dudes in the dirt. So, you know, I thought Simpson had a steady game. Zeitler too. I can't wait to get those other two dudes back in there, because I think what we saw, for as good as the offensive line was against that defensive line, you just take it to another level when you get Ronnie and Linderbaum back there. And I know people are a little afraid of Ronnie, but I think we saw Ronnie and Linderbaum. Well, Linderbaum was good, but Ronnie specifically, I just think that first game, that first half, I think all those people, everybody on offense except for the wide receivers were rusty.
Yeah.
Because in the second half, you see them calm down and look like themselves. So I can't wait to see those two dudes be put back into this offensive line and just see, you know, how much better it can get.
Yeah, shout out to Simpson too, man. I shouldn't have left him out. I mean, congratulations, right, on the new baby boy. You talk about commitment. He couldn't make the team plane because of when his son was born, so he got on Southwest and got to the game. I was like, dude's committed, boy. He's like, I ain't missing this thing for nothing. He said he pretty much told his wife, he's like, hey, you know, I was going to do everything I can to be here for the birth, but I got to go. He got on the plane, hey, got man, to the game.
When you don't have one of those five-year contracts, you got to make sure you're there.
Hey, you can't miss for nothing. And, he didn't. So, you know, getting up there and then playing, you know, solidly as he did, got to give him a shout out as well. But the offensive line performance, man, I wasn't worried, because I, like you said, I kind of knew about Makari. I knew what he was. Mustafa had looked solid all throughout the preseason, but, you know, now you're going into the regular season. But I had watched him, you know, a couple games when he's with the Bears. So you'd seen him in regular season games. Actually went back, I think it was 2021. And watched a game where they played against the Bengals, because I wanted to see him against some of these guys, because, you know, they were still on the D-line. Like, Reader was there, and he was solid in that game. So I really wasn't that worried about them. It was just, you know, you just wanted to see it. Like, everything is telling you, you know, they're probably going to be solid. But they were more than that. You know, they were more than solid. I'll tell you who does know about Morgan Moses' athleticism. Them damn DBs. They definitely know. They've been finding out each week that this big man can move out in space. Because that's one of the things, right? Your DB, you're out in space and offensive lineman's coming to block you. They tell you, you're never supposed to get blocked by that guy because you're way more athletic than him, right? You should be able to avoid him. But they can't. Can't get away from him because he's pretty damn athletic for a man that size. And I gotta, you know, kind of put a little, you know, eat a little crow myself, because I talked a bunch of junk about him when they signed him. I didn't think he was that good. I think, you know, but I don't feel that bad about it because I was like, I don't think he's that big of an upgrade over Mekari. And I still agree with that. He's more athletic. He's definitely more athletic than Mekari. But just in terms of overall, I don't think there's that big of a difference between the two of them. He's probably a little bit better in the run game because of his athleticism, because you can do some different things. So, you know, it's strengths and weaknesses. But again, let me just eat the crow. I started eating it, and then I was like, no, I'm not going to eat it. Let me eat it. I was wrong. You know what I'm saying? He's been better than I expected. I'm glad that he proved me wrong. And, you know, I just hope that that level of play continues. What else we want to hit on? Wide receiver usage. Saw a little bit more Nelson Aguilar in this game. It's probably not surprising when Odell goes down. You know, some guys who are in the rotation already, guys like him, guys like Duvernay. But, you know, probably had to play a few more snaps with Odell out. Aguilar, man, he seemed to pick up where he left off during camp because by all reports, he had really good chemistry with Lamar in camp. They were connecting on a lot of big plays during camp. Picked up again in this game, him connecting, you know, on some key third down plays. And, of course, the touchdown that you talked about, Chris, on that pretty fade ball. Bateman still getting in the mix. Duvernay, as Kerry called out on the last show, you should have been paying attention, got some carries, key carries. I mean, carries basically to close out that game, you know, at the time that they gave him to him. And even though it wasn't a ton, it was only three carries for the game, actually tied for the most in his Ravens career. He's never had more than three carries. It seemed surprising when I looked that up. I was like, that can't be right. He's only had three carries one other time in a game. So, you know, we tell y'all all the time, not just for the fantasy content, but when Kerry tell y'all something, y'all better listen. You just out here talking. He predicted the future, literally. But yeah, the wide receiver usage was, like I said, altered a little bit probably because of Odell tweaking that ankle. You could see it was just like flashes of like old school Odell, right? Catching that slant, putting a little move on and just cribbing it. Like you could see, like he was like, how did I not make this move? How did I not take this to the house? Because that's what did they used to say? That's all you would see. Elbows and asshole. That's all you would see from Odell because he'd catch it, put a move on you, and he was gone. And I thought we was about to see flashback to like old school Odell on that play. But looked like he kind of rolled his ankle a little bit where he planted. And he played a few more plays after that. But, you know, you could tell he just, you know, wasn't 100%. So I'm glad that, you know, they kind of took a cautious approach with him. But Zay obviously stepped up with huge, you know, catch down the field and other big plays. Bateman, like I said, just been making key catches. And Aguilar, too. So I was really pleased with the usage. And I guess shouldn't be surprised because it's something that Monken talked about all during the offseason. Like, he looks at balance, like having balance on offense differently than a lot of people think about that. A lot of people are thinking about, well, run pass, right? What's your ratio? He's like, no, how many players touch the ball? That's his idea of balance on offense. And if I got enough good players, I want as many of them to touch the ball as possible. And I think pretty much all of them do touch the ball in this game in some shape, form, or fashion. So, you know, that's something that I don't think we've always been able to say about this offense in the past. It's been pretty concentrated. You could even see it's going to be a little bit of transition for you, for our boy Mark Andrews. He did a couple of plays out there where he looking like, how did I not get that ball? It's like, yeah. Okay, yeah, you were open, but we got some other guys out here now. So it's not always going to come to you.
I was actually proud of Lamar on that play because, you know, that's where Lamar typically locks in. And he'll throw that pass because was the one to Zay where he missed Zay. Was that the pass, right?
That was what he. There was like two or three plays where Andrews is looking to him after the end of the play with his hands up, like
that was. So I think that was the one that popped out to me, and I was proud of Lamar because that was open, it was open the one to Zay, and he decided to go for the home run. You know, instead of the layup, he could have got the third down, but I'm proud of Lamar because we usually just see him go to that security blanket with Mark Andrews. But I'm glad to see that progression of him having that home run mentality in this new offense and trying to go over the top. So, I like that.
Yeah, and Zay, I think that was the play where Zay said they called it earlier in the game, and he was even more open the first time they called it. But he told Lamar, hey, we need to come back to that. If we come back to that, you know, put it up there. I'll go get it. And he did. But so that play was one of them. The one in the end zone, I really think that was to Odell. But Andrews kind of drifted over there. Because you can see after they get up, and Andrews gets up, and he points like, was that for you? And Odell's like, I don't know.
Odell's like, I don't know. I was with Kim K last night. I don't know.
I think he did know. But I think, you know, trying to be a good teammate, right? Hey, you know, hey, I gotta show you up out here. But I think that definitely probably was him. So it probably was for him. So I think it's gonna be a little bit of a transition, and it's gonna be interesting to watch when it happens in a loss. I think right now, because they're winning, he's not gonna act out about it. But you could tell just in other comments he's made in the past in different situations. He's got the capacity to like say something about it.
Yeah, he's going to let off a soldier tweet.
I don't know how he's going to do it, but he definitely seems like he's got the capacity where, you know, it's because it's going to come off like, well, he's just a competitor. That's just how you talk when you're a competitor.
Yeah, when you're that color, that's what you get.
Yeah, you get to get away with that. You get to get away with that. You're just a competitor. If you're on the other side of this thing, then it's like, oh, he's a malcontent. He's a locker room cancer. You know, he's not a team guy. You get labeled with all of that stuff. But yeah, he gets that pass. He gets that pass. But, you know, hey, hopefully they go 17-0 and we got to worry about it. But, you know, in the event they lose a game, it's just something I'll kind of be keeping an eye on, because this is different, right? He's been primarily the only game in town, right? Outside of Hollywood, it's been his show in the passing game. And you can start to see early on, we're only two games in, like Lamar's going to spread this thing around. You know what I'm saying? And to your point, he's not just going to take that underneath throw that maybe he's taken in the past, because he's got stuff down the field now that, you know, he may not have either had in the past, or maybe didn't have as much confidence in who it was. You know, shout out to my boy Miles Boykin down the field. But now, obviously, he's got tremendous confidence in all of these guys, so he's gonna let that thing rip. But you know, it's a good problem. That's a good problem to have, right? If you're like, well, we got to keep all these mouths fed. That's definitely a better place to be than having like one and a half guys who you're totally dependent on, and the defense knows you're right. The Bengals, they're not the only defense, but other defenses, hey, all you got to do is stop Mark Andrews and Hollywood Brown. You do that, that's it. They ain't got nothing else in the passing game. They ain't running their mouths like that right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely not. And one thing I'm looking to specifically this week, because, you know, I don't think we'll see Odell, is how Bateman performs and whether he kind of gets ramped back up, because when Odell left, I think Bateman ran like 92% of the routes from the point that Odell left the game. And you know obviously the first week he was, you know, clearly behind, third in the pecking order as far as routes run. So you know, I he's not a guy that's just gonna sit back in the shadows. You know, he's not that kind of personality. He's not that kind of talent. So I think he's itching to get out there and really make his presence felt. You know, he's like, hey, you know, Zay is out here doing his thing, but I'm a first round receiver too with plenty of talent. So, you know, he's one. I'm really curious to see what his uses looks like. And like you guys said, man, it's refreshing to have multiple options that you can throw out there, you know, on a weekly basis and not feel like this guy has to do this or this guy has to do that. I mean, even, you know, Duvernay going out there making a clutch catch, you know, you got different options and different ways to, you know, to get to the end goal of scoring points. And what's happening is this is like a learning experience for everybody involved. It's Monken's offense, but he's learning these players. So, you know, we're talking about week three, week 10, he's going to be in a lot better position to understand what each individual does best and be able to scheme up something that fits those guys' streams. So, you know, it's going to be exciting to see this thing grow on a week in and week out basis. And, you know, just want to jump in as far as the O-line a little bit. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. 9% pressure rate with your best two offensive linemen out in a big-time division game on the road against, you know, a lot of people's favorite in the division in Cincinnati. You know, that's not something we should gloss over. That's big time. So shout out to Joe D, you know, getting these guys set up and available to play. And, you know, again, you know, Morgan Moses is out there catching guys, you know, caught old boy slipping on that run play. And I'm just like, you catch me out there like that, man. I don't even know.
Business decisions have to be made.
Yeah. my workers' comp paperwork would have been in before halftime. You could have
He would have been Devontae Davis.
Yeah.
Done. Not coming back out the locker room. I'm done. I'm good. Business decisions would have to be made for sure for me out there. I'd be Olaying that bad boy. I'd be like, hey. Jumping out the way. Hey, I gotta play the rest of the game, baby. He out here trying to knock people out. But you know, this is you set people up, you know, a professional segue. You're only as good as the person setting you up. Number one, y'all heard Carrie, right? Told you about last week about Duvernay, this week Bateman. Just saying, you pay attention. The other thing you said though, about Monken still learning these players and kind of how to best utilize them within his offense reminds me of Mike McDonald last year, right? Coming in with his defense, but learning how to best utilize those guys on that side of the ball within his defense. And you could see it each week as he's learning from things and saying, okay, this worked. That didn't work as well. This was okay, but there was a part of it that maybe we should tweak. And you could just see that continue throughout the season. Coming into this season, you're seeing, you know, guys that have been in there last season and now are back. And even some of the new guys who he's had to integrate, you know, at corner. But he just has such a good handle, I think, on what the Bengals wanted to do going into this game. So not only does he have a different comfort level with calling his defense at the NFL level, right? He's got a whole season under his belt of doing that now. Calling it with these players mostly, right? Of course, some key guys out, but mostly these players. And it was like they knew what the Bengals wanted to do. They took away the things that they wanted to do best, and they basically said, hey, look, no defense is perfect, right? Every defense has weaknesses. Every call has weaknesses. But, you know, we're going to point you towards where we want the ball to go. Right. And if it goes there and if that's how you beat us, we got to tip our cap on that play because we played the way we wanted to. We made the ball go where we wanted to go and you just execute it better. 5'8" versus 6'5", ain't a whole lot you can do about that. OK, it's just one of those situations where you're going to have to tip your cap to T. Higgins being T. Higgins. But other than that, they really kept a lid for the most part. We were talking about this the other day, me and Denard on the Fire Zone show. I think that Joe Mixon play where he slipped out of the backfield and you can see Kyle Hamilton kind of got caught looking at the little fake end around to Jamar Chase. Didn't realize that Chase didn't have the ball until Mixon had already slept out. That was like their longest play. I think that was like 30 yards or something like that. That was it. Right. Everything else was kind of like in the teens or less. The other sort of quote unquote, you know, big plays they had. So they really did a good job keeping the lid, like me and Denard say, keep the lid on the cookie jar. If you keep the lid on the cookie jar and make offenses go the long, hard way, there's not a lot of offenses that want to play that way, right? Or even can play that way. 10, 11, 12 play drives down the field and ending with a touchdown. Like you see that and teams end with field goals. You don't see that a whole lot with teams ending with touchdowns, like multiple 10, 11, 12 play drives where they have to end with it, where they're able to end with a touchdown. You just don't see that much because most of these guys at quarterback, like the top dudes, they want to push the ball. They ain't in all this dinging and dunking. They ain't about that Tom Brady, Peyton Manning life. We trying to push that ball down the field, baby. But in this too high era, right, in this quarters, you know, even cover two, Ravens played damn near every variation of cover two you've ever seen against the Bengals this past week. That stuff down the field is not as easy to come by. And so you do have to kind of dink and dunk your way down the field. And it's hard to do. So credit to Mike Mack, man, and the rest of those guys on defense for having a good plan and really being disciplined with, you know, how they execute it within that plan.
Yeah, for sure. I think he's, you know, the job that he's been doing with the, you know, the depleted secondary that the Ravens have, and then you got veterans coming off of, you know, major injuries. And you're able to hold the Bengals to look. All right, I get Joe Burrow hurt his, you know, he re-injured his calf, but that dude was normal for 95% of that game. Like, so the job that he did, like, I thought it was a phenomenal job, and he has a track record now of being able to hold this Bengals offense in check. So I'm super proud of the job that he did, and you know, I'm happy that he's on our side, because you know, for a long for a time, and you mentioned Denard, and Denard was he was not a wink guy.
He was not
at all.
He was not.
And you know, we know the good that Wink can bring, but we also know very well the bad that Wink can bring. And to have a guy with this approach. And also have a team that's so physical, because you can try that short stuff, but this team is going to get those ball carriers to the ground. Like, that's one thing. Like, you might get a catch. They, you know, they might not have dudes who can, you know, stay in the hip pocket all through phase. But if they catch that, if somebody catches that ball, they're going to get you down. And that's one thing that I do like about this defense, is they are a sound tackling defense. And there was a long time there where we just had dudes flying all around, whiffing, throwing their arms out. So it's so good to see even the corners just break down, being able to tackle, get dudes on the ground. So, you know, hats off to Mike McDonald and the job that he's done.
The difference consistent tackling makes is amazing. Denard and I talked about that as well. Just, it's a fundamental thing, right? You take it for granted sometimes, but he always reminds me that really is job one on defense. Tackle the ball, get players on the ground. That really is your first job. And if you do that, you just never know what's going to happen on the next play, right? You might give up something and you're like, oh man, gave up a play, but you tackled the guy, got him down on the ground. Wasn't a touchdown. We can line up and play the next play. You never know what's going to happen on that next play. We've seen it. We've seen all kinds of crazy stuff in the NFL, man, where people line up and have to play another play because they either don't quite get a first down or don't get the ball in the end zone, and something crazy happens. And that's just the chance that you give yourself, you know, when you're a good tackling team. And that, I mean, I don't know that there's a better example than Patrick Queen for improved tackling, because we could use him in both of those things, right? The improved tackling and what you talked about just a minute ago, because people flying around and missing, diving. He was on that side of things too earlier in his career. But, you know, he's a guy that Denard and I talk about a lot because we're both big fans of him. And just that he's always been so eager to make plays. He wants to make plays so badly that really was kind of getting in his way early in his career. He was just trying too hard, trying to do too many different things and not really just focusing on what his job was, what his assignment was, and just trying to do that as consistently as he could. And it's like with Roe coming on, it just took the stress, the weight, the pressure, whatever, the expectation, however you label it, define it. It just seems to take all of that off of him. And now he can just play. And then you see that natural ability shine through when he's just playing, right? And he's not trying to live up to whatever, whether it's the expectation of being a first round pick or just his own expectation. Like, hey, I expect to be great. We want you to be great. But sometimes trying to be great, you're not great. if that makes sense. You cannot be great trying to be great if you're trying too hard to be great. But yeah, his tackling has really improved from a consistency standpoint. Doesn't mean he's going to make every single tackle. He's still going to miss some here and there. People are hard to tackle in the NFL. That's why it's the NFL. But way more consistent than what he's been. And Hillman Rowe, man, just they clean up everything, mm-hmm. right? In the box, sideline to sideline, even in coverage, even though, you know, I think it might have had a few boo-boos in coverage this week, but it's a tough cover when you got guys like Chase in the slot. Sometimes they'll bump Higgins in there. Even Tyler Boyd, this is not an easy task covering those dudes in the middle of the field as a linebacker. So I'm not gonna be too hard on him, but yeah, Queen, man, he's just, you know, he's been my boy. I've been hard, you know, I've been high, I've been low, we've been up, we've been down, but it's because you believe in him. I believe in him so much, and I'm like, man, if he could just get to that point where he can, you know, relax and just play his game and not feel like he's got to live up to something or be second coming or Ray Lewis or any of that. Just be the first Patrick Queen, and that's going to be plenty good.
Yeah, for sure. And Mike, you hit on something, you know, just talking about the defensive approach these days with the too high and, you know, a lot of cover six looks and that kind of stuff. And when you look at this defense, it is just built to take advantage of that kind of, I mean, I guess you can kind of call it a market inefficiency right now, because, you know, scoring is down and a lot of people were kind of built to try to take advantage of like a defense that's not being played the way it's being played now. And, you know, there's a lot of teams that I think it was. So Davis Mattis was talking about this earlier. He's talking about the counter to this that, you know, people are going to kind of figure out. If you want to force these teams to kind of get it 7 yards at a time, you know, quick hitting, stuff like that. You got to go get the jitterbug receivers. And, like, you know, that's something that is becoming more in vogue now, but it wasn't before. Like, you know, people, you know, would, you know, look down on guys if they were too small. But, you know, those are the guys that if you're playing this style of defense and you need a guy to uncover quickly, and you need a guy to be able to get a couple extra yards out of the catch, those are the kind of guys that you need. And you look at the Bengals, for instance, they don't really have that guy. And, you know, thankfully with Zay, the Ravens have that guy. But I say that to say the way the Ravens are built, they are built to take advantage of that lack of kind of approach around the league. And then, like Chris says, I mean, not even just the starting lineup. Look at all the sub-package defensive players that play. They all tackle. Mm-hmm. And that's down the line. That's not just, you know, defensive ends and linebackers. That's the corners. You know, Darby, Rock Ya-Sin, Brandon Stevens, you know, any secondary player right now that gets snaps, tackle. Even our Darius. Mm-hmm. You know, it may not be the prettiest thing all the time because, you know, he's light, but, you know,
it gets you down.
Yeah. They all have that physical approach, and you can tell they take pride in coming up and making a play and, you know, not allowing drives to be extended. So, you know, it's just a beautiful thing to watch this all come together. And everybody seems to be that much more comfortable in the defense. Everybody's playing, like, you know, sound assignment football. And, you know, it just comes back to, you know, our initial thoughts when McDonald was hired is this is a defensive approach that is going to allow them to be able to win all different styles of football games because, you know, it's just something that's more sustainable. You know, Wink was great and he did a lot of great things, but, you know, Wink is trying to do things that, you know, just really isn't necessary anymore for the way the game is played. And, you know, you have to be willing to adjust and adapt. And McDonald is willing to do that. And it's not like McDonald is you know, just sitting back in zone and, you know, in these bland zones and just, you know, just letting people get 7 yards here, 7 yards there. He's mixing it up too. You know, he's doing a lot of innovative things, dropping people, moving people around, you know, creating confusion at the line of scrimmage. But, you know, at his core, it's about keeping everything in front of you, making people drive the length of the field, and, you know, just daring people to put 10-play drives together. And people aren't really showing that they're adept at really being able to do that. I mean, that's really, really hard to do. You know, one misstep, one penalty can derail a whole drive. So, you know, if you can do that for 4 or 5 times in the game, for 3, 4 touchdowns and a couple field goals, tip your hat to them and move on. But I think the odds are, especially when you have the level of talent of defense that this team has, I think the odds are with them being able to hold a lot of teams in check every week.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you think about it on offense, how many things you need to go right to be able to sustain that kind of drive, that number of plays. Offensive line's got to block wide receivers, pass catchers, whoever they are, tight ends, running backs, they got to run the right routes. They got to get open. Quarterbacks got to deliver the ball on time, accurately. Like, all these pieces have to work together. And you're talking about doing that for 10, 11, 12 plays every play all the way down the field. And it's just hard to do. But, it's, you know, for Wink, we talked about this last year on the Fire Zone. I know I'm mentioning it a lot, but we're in the defensive segment. So we had a lot of these conversations. It was an evolutionary problem with Wink. And that was Denard's biggest issue. He's like, this guy's a dinosaur. We've evolved. We're in the human phase now. He's back with the dinosaurs. And he's like, you know, you got to think about the cyclical way that this stuff moves, right? He's like, you go back to the LOB days, right? Legion of Boom with Seattle, that style of defense, right? That single high, cover one, cover three, 8-man box, stop the run. We're not really going to give them time to throw the ball down the field. We're going to play press bell on the outside, so they're not going to have anything, you know, really vertical down the field anyway. And we got an eraser in the deep middle of the field in Earl Thomas. They're not even going to try to throw it in the middle of the field because Earl's back there, right? That became the predominant style of defense because it is a copycat league. But then that evolved where people started saying, okay, well, we're not going to bang our head on offense. We're not going to bang our head up against a wall trying to run into 8-man boxes and throwing go balls when your corner's bailing, you know, after jamming a guy at the line of scrimmage. All right, we'll take some more of this underneath stuff. We'll do like Gary just said. We'll get guys who can make you miss, guys who can get yak, and we'll just start exploiting, you know, that the very thing that's your strength, we're going to turn around and make it a weakness. And it'll be cool to see, interesting to see what the next evolution will be now against this style of defense. We're probably starting to see it a little bit with Miami. They're probably kind of the forerunner right now, but then I don't know. Cause I heard Chase Daniel on a pod today say, hey, look, speed, that's what they're doing. He was like, I'm not taking anything away from Mike McDaniel and the motions and the cool little concepts and Tua and the RPOs. He said, but it's speed. They've got speed in Tyreek and Jalen Waddle. Like nobody else has speed. And so he's like, I don't care what you're doing on defense. Those guys can catch the ball in front of you, make you miss, and take it to the crib. even if you're 20 yards off the ball and in a pedal, they can run past you, still run past you with a 20-yard head start. Just, you're flipping your hips, you've turned, you're running the whole other way, and it's like you just feel this thing come behind you and just run right past you. It's like there's nothing you can do to defend that. I don't care what your scheme is. You can't defend that. Now, everybody doesn't have that kind of speed on their team. So I think it's some combination of, you know, having more yak players, more space players. And we heard that word a bunch if you've been following the Ravens and Todd Monken. But then also speed. You know, speed is like, well, David, speed kills, right? That's always been kind of the trump card that you could have. But it's going to be interesting to see. And then the run game. I will give G-Row credit. You know, I got to give my man credit because I do think that he was out ahead of that. I think he kind of saw how teams were evolving defensively, and he said, all right, cool. I'm going to go to the power run game. I'm going to go to the quarterback run game. You want to keep two safeties and want to play with these light boxes, we're going to get medieval. And had, you know, a good amount of success doing it. He just, you know, couldn't complement it with the passing game consistently enough. But I give him credit for kind of seeing that, hey, that's at least one way to attack these styles of defenses. It's not the only way. And you got to have more than that, you know, to kind of reach the highest levels. But, you know, I'm always going to tip my cap to my man, G-Row. Somebody else I got to tip the cap to. I don't know why Harbaugh calls him J.D. Clowney. Is that a nickname? Where's the D come from? Is it because his name is Jadeveon? He's calling him J.D.?
I think his middle name is Dangerous.
Okay. He definitely woke up feeling dangerous against the Bengals, because I don't know what Jonah Williams did to him, but he wrecked that man for almost that entire game anytime he lined up over top of him. I mean, whether it was the passing game or the running game, he was just in his chest, you know, just doing violent, violent things. Things that would probably get you arrested if they happened anywhere other than an NFL field on that game. And they needed him, man. They needed him in that game because, you know, Owe, you know, he tweaks the ankle and goes out. So now you're left with Clowney, Ajabo, and Tavius Robinson for the most part, right, as kind of your outside linebacker, DN, you know, body types. And, you know, Ajabo still kind of, you know, finding his way in the league. Tavius, look, he's just got drafted this year, and he was raw even in college. So was Ajabo. So you got two young guys, raw guys. So who do you got to lean on? You got to lean on the vet. And he showed up. He showed up and showed out in a big way. So that signing, where maybe people were like, I don't know, what's he got left in the tank? Yeah, it's game. It's week two. We can have another conversation later in the season. You can say, I told you he was washed. We'll see. But right now, as of right now, week two, Jadeveon was out there wrecking shop.
Yeah, man, I was happy to see it. You know, I wouldn't say I hated the signing, but I wouldn't say I was over the moon about the signing. I was just kind of like indifferent because we know how disruptive he could be. I don't subscribe to all of that, you know, he's a bust and all of that crap. Like, if you've watched Jadeveon Clowney over the years, if you've watched his games, not looked up his stats, watched the games, you've seen he's been one of the most disruptive pass rushers in the league. But then, you know, you also have to factor in, you know, he's a dude that's been banged up a lot in this league. And that was the part that I was kind of hung up on. And I was like, oh, you know, what Clowney are we getting? You know, are we getting that dude who was a disruptor when the Ravens faced him in 2019 and when he was on the Seahawks? Because the Ravens did everything they could to try to get him going one way and, you know, counter it and have, you know, basically have him take himself out of the play because he was so much of a disruptor at that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought it was going to take some time for him to ramp up. But, I mean, week one, you know, he probably should have had two sacks week one.
Yep.
And, you know, he got his this week two. So he's, you know, he's been a pleasant surprise for me. I did not think he was going to come out like this. But I don't know. It must be something in that Baltimore water because, you know, when they signed JPP, I mean, he came out like gangbusters too, and playing a whole bunch of snaps. And, you know, they're doing the same thing again this year with Jadeveon. So hopefully he could keep it up. Hopefully, you know, Owe can come back. Hopefully Bowser could come back so we could keep him fresh because, you know, we don't want him to empty the tank out the first few weeks of the season. So hopefully they could keep him fresh and healthy and he could keep this level of play up.
Yeah, we don't want a Sammy Watkins situation, right? Sammy, like the ultimate spades player, right? I got four in a possible. I got four games. Maybe I get you a fifth or a sixth. I don't know where those four are going to be during the season. Could be the first four, could be the middle four, could be the last four. I don't know. But whatever part of the season I hit those four, once I hit four, that's it. It's a wrap. At that point, you might not get nothing else at that point. So we don't want it to get to that point with Jadeveon either. So hopefully – And this is what you worry about too. You see a game like that where a guy goes down and he does have to play more snaps, and then going into this game, kind of trending like maybe Owe doesn't go in this game either. He hasn't practiced yet this week. Then again, that puts a higher snap count on Clowney, and then you know I think that's where he can become more susceptible to stuff. So you don't want to expose him to that. Hopefully, you know, game script can kind of go in a way where maybe they can get some of the younger guys out there and he not have to play quite as many snaps. You know, obviously you want to get the win, but maybe the game can kind of play out in a way where he doesn't have to, you know, shoulder so much of the snap load either. Guy who did play a lot of snaps, I suppose every snap, Geno Stone, DCP favorite, friend of the show. He's never been on the show, but we'd love to have you on, Gino. It's just a friend of the show because from the very beginning, going back to when they drafted him, I think in the sixth or seventh round, right, out of Iowa, it was later.
I think it was six.
Yeah.
Six,
later in the draft, but we said even back then, he's the type of guy that can stick around on a roster and end up taking somebody's spot. Now, that hasn't necessarily played out, but when they've needed him, he's answered the bell. I mean, this is not the first time. You know, last year, unfortunately, Marcus Williams, you know, was injured and Geno had to come in and play some games there and, you know, play solidly. And then this game, you know, was solid again. You know, good. We talked about tackling. He was very good in run support and coming up, tackling pass catchers. And then the pick in the red zone, which he apparently called, according to Marlon Humphrey, said he talked to him before the game and he said, yeah, I'm going to get a pick. And called the coverage and the route that he was going to pick too. So, you know, Geno could see it, man. He was manifesting, and he made it happen. So happy for Geno, man, because it had been a little bit of a journey. Right? He started out here, and then they let him go, or either he was on the practice squad and he got poached. I don't know how that happened. I know he was with the Texans for a minute.
And then, was it the Titans?
I can't. You could be right. I can't remember. It was a T team. some team. But then he ended up back here and, you know, really hasn't looked back, you know, since then. Been a core special teamer and, like I said, has come in and played on defense when they've needed him. So it's happy to see him not just come in and play, but, you know, make a big play in the game, you know. And I know people give him a hard time for not scoring on that play. But, hey, he got the pick. And got a nice little return, right? Flip field position a little bit. And hopefully he can get another one and take that one to the crib next time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like, you know, watching, being a proud father, watching your son, you know, make a big play because, you know, him and our Darius have been our guys, you know, from the very, very beginning. So, you know, it was just nice to see him, that pick. When it happened, it looked like I was watching college film of him all over again because, like, that was his game in college. Like, just being that anticipatory player, you know, being prepared and letting that speed his game up because we know he's not the fastest guy in a straight line, you know, but, you know, preparation will put you in position to make plays. And you know, that's what he did now. He probably could have done a little bit more with that, But, you know, in his mind, he's probably like, hey, man, I made the play. I flipped field position. What else do y'all want?
we too spoiled with Ed.
Yeah.
Mark Ingram said field vision was on Nathan.
But, yeah, it was good, you know, really good to see him make a play because, like you said, he'd been through a lot, you know, was on the roster, you know, didn't make the 53. He was on the practice squad, got poached from the practice squad, you know, found his way back to Baltimore, came back, was still kind of on the fringes. And then, you know, last year, I think when he was able to get playing time, he kind of solidified himself as like a real piece of this team. And then, you know, might as well just jump into our Darius too, you know, pour one out for him. Hopefully it's not a season long thing, because he's a guy that, while there's still some issues there, there's still some warts to kind of work through, I think he's solidified himself as like a legitimate sub package defender in this league, with the ability to play, you know, safety or, you know, play nickel corner. I think he, besides, you know, him being matched up with Higgins, you know, on that touchdown, I never saw a moment where it looked like it was too big for him. You know, when he was on Tyler Boyd, when he come up in the running game, you know, whatever it is, he didn't look out of place. And so for, you know, getting a guy, I think he wasn't even drafted. He was undrafted, right? They signed him as an undrafted free agent. When you get a guy like that and, you know, you're going to put him in these high leverage situations, again, against the, you know, everybody's division favorite. And for him to be able to be as active as he was on Sunday and not look out of place, I think that's a huge, you know, win for your team. You know, when you have a Lamar and you got stars that, you know, have high salaries, it's important to find these guys, these under the radar guys. And Ardarius is one of those guys, and I think he was kind of starting to make his way as far as a sub package defender. And hopefully he's not out for the whole season. Hopefully he's able to come back and kind of not lose this momentum he was kind of, you know, ramping up to, you know, prior to this injury.
Yeah, this team, man, they have an opportunity to be you know, the start that they – yeah, Matt Breida. I knew I should have rocked Matt Breida tonight. Anyway, picked him up off the waiver wire. I didn't play him. Just scored a touchdown for those not watching the Giants 49ers game. They've got a chance, man, because they won their first two games, obviously. But reinforcements, man, later in the season when they get their full complement back. Now, obviously, they're not going to get JK back, unfortunately, but you get Marlon, you get Marcus Williams on defense. You know, on offense, you get Tyler and Ronnie back. I mean, you got an opportunity. You know, you talked about Ardarius, Pepe. You know, you got, man, I'm telling you, yeah, Keaton Mitchell. Yeah, Keaton Mitchell. I'm blanking on the pass rusher. Of course, Tyus. Yeah. I can't believe I skipped over Tyus. But yeah, they got a chance, man, to kind of really take it to another level, because there's so many guys that key contributors, and even just like, you know, kind of integral, you know, kind of role type guys who could be coming back as the season goes on. So for them to be, you know, winning these games and doing it despite some of the key injuries that they have. I mean, we're going to see it again. It looks like this week going into the Colts game, they're probably going to be down. Ronnie's probably not going to play. Linderbaum's probably not going to play. Neither guy has practiced this week. I already mentioned Owe. We know Ardarius is out on IR. They did sign Kenyon Drake, even though I don't think Justice practiced both days so far this week. So they signed Kenyon Drake. That's probably a pretty strong indication that Justice probably won't go this week. So they've been having to do it, man. It just seems like that's just one thing, and it's everywhere in the league. I mean, it's just part of the NFL game, right? You're going to have injuries, but they've been able to sustain them this year with the roster. You guys have both mentioned the job that EDC has done, you know, building this roster and building it with quality depth, and then even being able to go out and sign guys who are just, you know, out there, like a Kenyon Drake, you know, when you need some help at running back. So it's going to be interesting this week, again, because I mentioned the weather forecast. I think it's supposed to rain, maybe even be a little bit windy on Sunday. So, you know, you talked about it, Chris, being a gust of bus game. And, you know, I think that it's the kind of game that people are going to, expect them to win and probably win handily. I'm not sure what the spread is looking like so far this week. I got to figure they're probably at least a touchdown favorite, I would think, right? Like a 6-point favorite, probably. I'd be surprised if they weren't at least a 6-point favorite at home. But this is a Colts team, even if Anthony Richardson can't go, which I haven't heard if he's clear concussion protocol or not, that they got some fight in them. You know, the defense is still a pretty solid defense. They're young at corner. You guys have talked about that, kind of inexperienced at corner. But, you know, the front seven is kind of still who they've been over time. And then offensively, even with Minshew at quarterback, he processes really quickly. He's been in that Shane Steichen offense at least, what, second year now? Maybe more, but at least second year now. So, you know, not the team to sleep on. You know I say that every week. People are like, man, they just keep beating these teams. He said, don't sleep on nobody. I can't. It's just the way my mind works. I look at these teams. I watch them on film. And I'm like, ooh, this could be good. Oh, they might have to deal with that. Oh, Ravens better be careful. I keep seeing this stuff where I'm like, you gotta respect it. You know, you gotta respect everybody in this league because they can jump out and get you. You know, if you're not prepared. And I don't think that happens with the Ravens. I think that's one thing you can kind of say throughout the John Harbaugh era is like he generally has the team prepared. You know, you very rarely see them just like get their doors blown off in any game. So I'm looking forward to it, but these injuries, man, you do just start to wonder, like, do you reach a breaking point where you just can't sustain anymore? You know what I mean? It just gets hard. You wonder. Hopefully we don't get there.
Yeah, I think they can. I think they have enough talent right now to you know, kind of weather the storm, so to speak. Especially when you have a guy like Lamar, and you know, if he can just keep getting comfortable in this system, and you know, just develop more of that timing with the wide receivers and Mark Andrews. Well, we don't have to develop anything with Mark Andrews, but you know, just develop that chemistry with the offense as a whole and just take full command of it. I mean, it's the sky's the limit on offense. You know, as long as he's protected, the sky is the limit. And with these cornerbacks that the Colts have, whew, it's going to be a long day for them, especially if the weather clears up, because the way Zay has these dudes looking, and, you know, Kerry mentioned it before with Bateman. And Kerry alluded to this earlier in the show when he was talking about fantasy analysts and how they view, you know, this offense. You know, they're wrong about Rashad Bateman. You hear them talk about Rashad Bateman, and you would think that he's playing like a bum, that he, you know, he's slow or he can't move or anything like that. And it's like, if you watch him, like, he's moving just fine. Mm-hmm. It's just the ball is being spread out, and that's what you want in real football. I mean, it doesn't work for fantasy football, but for real football, that's what you want. You want the ball to be spread out. And right. I think, you know, this is a game where it looks like he's primed to be, you know, one of the top wide receivers that's going to be out there. And, you know, I think Monken's probably aware of that, you know, and you know, trying to kind of like, not to say that Bateman is the squeaky wheel, because I don't see him doing that. But I feel like this could be one of those things where, you know, earlier in the offseason we heard Lamar refer to Bateman as his number one. And it's like, you know, all right, you know, everybody got their little shine, their big plays. You got your little dinks and dunks, but, you know, now it's time for you to show why I called you our number one wide receiver. So, you know, I thought that's a great call by Kerry earlier in the show, because like you said, Mike, he hit it on the head with the Duvernay one. And you look at the box score, And it's like, ah, Duvernay, he ain't really doing much. But like we've been saying, you watch the game.
Yeah.
And he had an impact on that. And he was one having one arm freed from the DB from having the touchdown, in my opinion. So, I think this is one that the Ravens win handily. Just hopefully they can get out of this unscathed and, you know, no new injuries. And hopefully by this time next week, we'll be talking about dudes like Marlowe and Linderbaum and Stanley and all those other guys starting to practice, or and even those dudes who are on IR, like or whatever the hell the list is called now, with where Bowser's on and Keaton Mitchell and those dudes.
Yeah, there's multiple lists. It's hard for me to keep up with all of them. I love the Bateman call too, because it's not like he's an unknown in this league. When he's healthy, we saw it at the beginning of last year, he makes big plays. We've seen him do it. And if you, like you've been saying all show, Chris, if you watch the games, you'll see routes where he's not targeted. You'll see him against the Bengals game. There was at least one, I remember, a go route where he just cooked the dude, stacked him, like, quick, within, like, the first 5, 6, 7 yards and was open down the left sideline. But, you know, the ball went somewhere else. That's just football, right? That happens sometimes. But, you know, when you're winning routes like that, because if you do that consistently, then the ball is going to find you. It's just a matter of time. And I do think that you make a good point, too, about Monken kind of being tuned into that, too. He just seems like the kind of coordinator who is tuned into that kind of stuff and kind of has a good sense for, all right, when I kind of need to get guys, because you saw it early in the Bengals game, right, going to Odell. Like, hey, let's get him started early. Let's get him some touches early, right? G-Row didn't give a damn about it. Hey, you know who gonna touch the ball, a running back or a tight end? That's how we gonna get started. You give a damn about the wide receivers. So I think Monken, being a former wide receiver coach, you know, playing quarterback in his playing days, I think he's just a guy that's more sensitive to those things in the passing game and just understands the mindset that those skilled guys have. Is like, hey, they want to make big plays. They want to have an impact in the game. And so you got to get them integrated into the game early, right, for the most part. Get them some touches. Get the ball in their hands so they can feel like, all right, I'm in the game, you know, now. Now I can really just kind of relax. I ain't got to walk out here. Or, you know, I ain't got to be over there on the sideline, like, you know, calling for the ball or pressing out here trying to get the ball or anything like that. I can just play free and the ball will find me. So I would not be surprised. One, because Kerry's usually right about these things, but then two, just I think Mock has got a good feel for that kind of thing. I think he's shown it already so far this season. I mean, of course, you'd be a fool not throw the ball to Zay. I mean, we've seen what he does. So, of course, he you know, obviously wants to target him a certain number of times a game, but whether it's Aguilar, Duvernay, whoever, you know, Justice Hill, you know what I'm saying? He finds a way to get. I wouldn't be surprised if Kenyon Drake is up for this game, which, like you said, Chris, don't see why it wouldn't be. If he, you know, gets utilized not just as a runner, but, you know, even in the passing game, catch some balls out of the backfield, or, you know, maybe some check downs or something like that, because he's a solid receiver at the running back position. So none of that would surprise me. And it's good. It's a good feeling to be able to have that belief in your offensive coordinator, like, hey, he's going to get these guys involved. He's going to get these guys touches. He's going to find a way to keep these guys integrated in the game plan. Haven't always been able to say that, especially not about wide receivers.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of things I hope for the game. I hope the weather permits and allows them to really, really lock in the passing game and take advantage of the secondary, because, you know, there are matchups out there for them to exploit. You know, I think this is a game where you can get multiple guys to, you know, standout performances, you know, if they really, you know, choose to attack in that way. Another thing, I hope, you know, we kind of expect Justice to miss this game. And I hope it's a situation that his kind of role and touches just kind of gets absorbed by the guys, more so by the guys that have been here as opposed to the guys that like Gordon and Drake, and no not to them at all. But you know, the strength of this Colts team is in the front seven. You know, they get after it in the run game, you know, defensively. And so, you know, you got Gordon who, you know, is not the same player he was. You got Drake who's coming off of the street.
Somebody told me he was dust. They called Melvin Gordon. He was dust.
So, yeah, we definitely don't want no dusty dudes out there absorbing, you know, 10 plus carries. You know, I think this should be a situation where, you know, if it was a 50-50 split between Gus and, well, it was probably more 60-40 between Justice and Gus last week, then maybe it should be more, you know, 60 to Gus, 65 to Gus, something like that. 70. You know, let Duvernay, you know, absorb a little bit more. Maybe Duvernay gives you 20, 25. And then between Drake and Gordon, maybe they absorb, you know, 10%, you know, maybe a little, you know, just giving Gus a blow on early down kind of thing. But, you know, hopefully this is a situation where the weather permits and they really are able to attack through the air in the way that I think they can, because, you know, these are some talented D linemen for the Colts. And besides, you know, their one standout kind of defensive tackle, Buckner, the rest of the guys are kind of trying to find their way as pass rushers. They're not quite there yet. I mean, they have some guys that can get there, but they're not quite every week impacts in that way. If this offensive line can hold up in the way they held up against Cincinnati, it could be absolutely fireworks down the field. Yeah. So I hope they get that opportunity to kind of make that happen.
Yeah, if the weather is it clears up, it could be bombs over Baghdad situation. It definitely has that potential when you look at the corners for the Colts right now. And like you said, out front, we know Buckner is a problem at D tackle as a pass rusher and in the run game. Is Buddy Grover Stewart, who Harbaugh mentioned by name earlier this year. I'm sorry, earlier in the week, I think at his first presser, it was like one of the first guys, like nobody asked him about it. He just, just volunteered that dude's name because he said, we really liked him in the draft. He is a load in the run game. Not quite, you know, the pass rusher, not on the level that Buckner is, but he is a load in the run game. So those guys on the Ravens interior O-line, it's going to be a test for them because he is an absolute load. So number 90, you don't remember the name, just look for 90 out there because he is a problem in the run game. But you mentioned those other young guys, hey, Kwity Paye, Deo Odeyingbo, Samson Ekwabon, not a young guy, he's been around, but you know, new to their team this year. So you know, not necessarily you know, Nick Bosa or anybody like that, TJ Watt out there. So if the offensive line can give Lamar some time, and you said it, if the weather holds up, it could be a good day for those guys in the passing game. And shout out to Gus, you mentioned it, but man, he really kind of had an underrated game in my opinion. Ripped off a couple chunk runs, and then just had a bunch of like sustaining runs, just like first down type runs, not long runs, 2-3 yard runs here and there, but they were all for like first downs, like 4 or 5 of them, like for first downs, and to seal the game. At mm-hmm. the end, same thing with Duvernay's carries. Those came on that last drive where they needed 2 first downs. So, like Chris said, you look at the box score, you may say, oh, well, I don't see. What are you talking about, Duvernay? What did he do? Fantasy-wise, it could have been better if he got that touchdown, like Chris said. But real football-wise, to go to him in that situation when you need to seal the game, you don't want to put your defense back out there, that shows you that was something that they, you know, really felt like they could – hang their hat on in critical situations where they needed to get yards on the ground. They ran it twice, I want to say, in those last handful of plays. And then Gus, you know, kind of sealed it away, getting that last first down.
I think doing it that way is better, too, because I think you keep all of those guys engaged and you keep them kind of like all they like they all know that they have a role. You know, it's not just the Mark Andrews show. It's not just the Zay show. Yeah. It's no, you're important too. Like you can like you're not gonna be, you know, the 80 catch a year dude. You know, 1,200 yards, 10 touchdowns. But you have an important role on this team that's gonna help us to get to where we want to go. And I think showcasing that and putting those guys in those positions to succeed, and you know, put them in spots where they're comfortable and they know they can excel, I think that's really important. And that's something that we're seeing early on with Todd Monken that he'll do. He's going to use the players that he has and put them in those positions where they're able to succeed.
And if you win and win in a big way, like you get to the bowl and you win the Super Bowl, everybody's going to get paid anyway. Whether it's here or somewhere else, everybody is going to get paid when you win like that. We've seen it with Super Bowl teams where players get paid, coaches get paid, everybody's getting paid, right? New jobs, whatever. So if you can win the ultimate game, the money part, the financial part is going to take care of itself, really. But I guess, is there anything else we want to hit on? Or we touch on everything we wanted to get to? I think I got everything on the rundown. I try to keep it in front of me. Keep the trains on schedule. You know what I'm saying? Keep it running. I think we hit every day.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Okay. We good. All right. Hey, last thing I'll say, just because I mentioned Duvernay, we talked about him a couple times. I like what they're doing with him. I like what they did in that game because they're playing the hits. That was Power Read. They still been running some of that stuff, but what I think Monken is doing when he calls it, so power read, the little QB counter stuff, bash, we call it, where the run back goes one way and the pullers go the other way and Lamar can keep and follow the pullers. I think he's kind of using that to his advantage because he knows they run it so much in the past that defenses are keen on Lamar when they get the quick read on that play and they're like, okay, here come the pullers. All right, this is, you know, Lamar, he's going to, you know, follow behind the counter guys or he's going to follow behind the power read guy. But he's not. He's handing the ball off more than he has in the past. And I think right now they're using that to their advantage to say, hey, because you can see how soft the defense was on both of those runs with Duvernay. I mean, he was getting 5-6 yards before anybody even got close to him. Because they're packed inside thinking Lamar's going to keep the ball and cut it inside like they've done for the past 4 years. But that's not what's happening right now. And then defenses will adjust, and then Lamar will keep it, and that's when he'll hit those 50, 60-yarders to the crib up the middle. So I like how he's still utilizing that right now, not doing it nearly as much as, you know, G-Row did. But in that series at the end of the game, that was G-Row-like in that he called him like 3 or 4 times. That's definitely what G-Row would have done. You know, I'm calling the QB run stuff. And Lamar would have kept it, though. That would have been the difference under G-Row. Lamar would have probably ran all four of those. Right now, what I think is smart about Monken's approach is, hey, we're going to call it, but we're going to hand it off. And I think it's still based on the read. I'm not saying he's saying to Lamar, like, hey, hand this off, you know, pre-snap. I'm not saying it's a predetermined thing. I think the defense is just playing it that way because they're so used to Lamar keeping the ball when they call that, especially in that situation, in the game situation. Ball's going to be in A's hand. He's not giving it to nobody else. But to Chris's point, he's spreading the ball around, not just in the passing game, but in the running game. He's dominated the running game conceptually, you know, in the past couple of years, even with as good as they've been running the ball with the other backs. When it's been critical situations, it's been Lamar. But this time they said, you know what? No, we're going to switch it up. We're going to hand some of those off. Lamar still do his thing. We saw him scramble at the end and pick up that one, you know, sort of key first down, or I don't know if it was a first down. It was a pretty big chunk play. So they're just doing it in a different way. So it's little stuff like that that I note down that I'm like, man, I like the approach with this stuff early on. I think this is a smart way to approach it. And then when defenses adjust, Monk has already got the built-in counter. Okay, now you want to come back and start playing that stuff. Now Lamar really unleashes, and he's cribbing some of these things. Could have cribbed one in this game. The one that he did keep, where he kind of like got tripped up, he would have been one on one with the safety, and that's a no bueno situation for the defense. You don't want Lamar Jackson one on one with anybody on your defense in the open field, because it's probably going to the house. So it's coming. He's still going to have some of that stuff. It ain't going to be probably what it's been in the past, and that's fine. I think that's more than fine, actually. But anyway, my last little rant. You know, it's hard for me. I look at that run game, and you know I want to talk about it, but I gotta keep it to myself. So, you know, y'all know what to do. I say it every week. And if you know what to do, I probably shouldn't have to say it. But anyway, like, subscribe, share everywhere, tell a friend to tell a friend. Be on the lookout for Kerry's fantasy article for his DFS lineup this week. If you haven't been playing those, you should be throwing those in some tournaments, because you're going to make – I will say this. I mean, you've had a lot of the key plays, a lot of the plays that have been in, like, big GPP winners, like the Millie Maker or whatever. You've had a lot of those key plays in your lineups. So even if you're somebody who's like, hey, I'm not going to take the lineup verbatim, I kind of want to sprinkle some of my own stuff in there, as you should. I mean, you're the player. You know, one of the worst things I think you can do in fantasy or DFS is to say, well, if I had done this because you wanted to do it, but somebody else said do that and you didn't do it. I think that's one of the worst things you can do. Do what you want to do, but you should definitely pick some of those plays because they've been in the winning lineups. So they're good plays. You should definitely incorporate some of those. I've been doing it ever since you started the DFS series. I throw that lineup in a tournament every week, at least one. So if I win, I probably should give you some money. But it depends. Depends on how much I win. If I win a lot of money, I will definitely give you some money. If it's not that much money, then I'm probably going to keep that for myself. But if I hit the milli, you best be sure. I'm definitely, you know, because I couldn't have done it. I couldn't have done it without you if that happens. So I throw it in that one. I throw it in the milli all the time because I'm just like, hey, never know, man. Never know. Yeah.
One of these times, man, it's going to come through. So, yeah, definitely peep that out. Like Mike says, like I'm willing to do certain things, take certain chances, or see things from a certain viewpoint that maybe others won't. And so you can take pieces of it, and that's fine. And then also definitely check out the Sprinkle Me plays on Sunday. That thread, you know, I jump in, try to give you like a contrarian play to kind of sprinkle in here and there, and, you know, just use it. I mean, last week, Tannehill was my play. Tannehill got there for you at 5K. Did some things.
Very bold at how he looked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I like I said, I stood on it for a couple of days. I'm like, damn, do I really want to put this out here like this? But the more and more I started looking at the matchup and looking at everything, it was like, you know what? I like to play too much. I just kept coming back to it. And I'm like, okay. I'm definitely going to be mixing this in my tournament. So, you know, just go ahead and put it out there. And, like, honestly, I feel like a lot of my Sprinkle Me plays really end up hitting on some level. So I feel real confident after the work I put in throughout the week. Once it gets to Sunday and I put my name on a Couturier play, I feel like, you know, that's somebody you should – be paying attention to and mixing in.
Yeah, man. I know I always use your stuff. You know, you gave me the sneak peek to the tiers before the season started. So, you know, if you're not looking at carry stuff, you're doing yourself a major, major disservice. And, you know, I go up against it every week in our DFS lineups. And I think I'm two weeks in a row where I'm at the bottom, so I'm pretty much, you know, where I belong when it comes to those tournament plays with us. You know, listen to Kerry, check his stuff out, man, because, you know, he's definitely one of the best out there doing it.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate it.
No doubt, man. And, you know, we lost Mike. something with his internet, but you know, we're gonna sign off. You know, for Mike, you know, you always check Mike out at Abukari on Twitter. You know, you can check out Kerry Stevenson. Kerry, I always forget your damn handle. I think it's Kerry 1313, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Because I would say Kerry Stevenson 13, then I would say Kerry Stevenson 1313. So, oh, we got Mike back.
Got kicked out of my own stream. And wouldn't let me back in. You know what? Hey, I'm going to cut y'all off if y'all are in the middle of anything. Y'all definitely.
No, we were signing off.
Okay, good. Let me get out of here because I was like, man, if I lose this whole thing after we just did an hour and a half, I'm going to be hot. let me get out of here now so I can make sure we save this.
All right, everybody. Take care. Have a good one. See you next week.
Yeah, peace. We keep it real. Ain't no secrets here. See y'all.
But as I always say, like overall statistics just make you feel good because it really doesn't make a shit for this week. Like our job is to do the same thing this week, if that makes sense. I'm not trying to be mean, but it's really week to week. It's, you can't carry that over and say, well, hey, wait a minute, you know. No, we got to do it each week. That's what we're paid to do, and that is to try to find a way each week to do that.